Brandon Johnson here to talk to you about another great podcast called Who Charted. They're in the Earwolf family, and they have an Earwolf favorite on their latest episode. It's Jason Matzoukas. On each episode of Who Charted, Howard Kramer and Kulap Vilaysack sit down with a comedian guest to talk about what's charting in music and movies. On the latest episode, they sit down with the always hilarious Jason Matzoukas. You probably know Jason from the FX show The League, his frequent and hilarious guest appearances on Earwolf's comedy Bang Bang, and also as a co-host of the Earwolf podcast, How Did This Get Made? Subscribe to Who Charted in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's definitely some a lot of exciting things. About a month and a half ago, I'm coming up to a dumpster, and outside of the dumpster, it was a suitcase that was opened, and inside the suitcase was 24 porn DVDs, and there's a couple beer cans also in. So now I'm like, that guy must have had a good night.
Hey, Internet! This is Brandon Johnson. Welcome back to Cracked Gets Personal. I want to start this episode with an admission of mutual culpability. We are all living garbage factories. Now, I'd be willing to bet that most of you will throw one or more things in the trash while listening to this episode. I'm not here to lecture you. Robert and I threw out Red Bull cans and tiny plastic candy cups while we recorded this podcast.
I also threw away a bunch of stuff while I was writing it. So many plastic string cheese wrappers and coffee grounds and at least one actual office chair. I'm just a waste machine.
Look, we're all trash inside. Deep, deep inside. And so are you. Robert and I wanted a better idea of what it was like cleaning up after all the unbelievable filth generated from, you know, civilization and junk. So he went out into the world and found some garbage men to talk to. Turns out they have a lot more to offer than hilarious stories of discarded porn. Because of what these guys do, they have a whole different view on society. Here's that view.
Yeah, my name is Larry, and I worked as a garbage collector and truck driver during my mid to late teenage years.
He picked up trash in a large American city during the 70s. And next we've got Matt.
I am 24. I've been working with Kent Sanitation and Recycling in Fargo, North Dakota for 4 years now. I was working in their scrap metal yard for the first year, and they threw me in a truck.
We've also got the intensely, profoundly British Alex.
Yeah, my name's Alex. I was a garbage man in the eastern part of England. Yeah, I started there in 2011.
And last we have Bill, who worked in Canada, which is the England of America.
I was a garbage man a few years ago, but sort of a side garbage man. I did the job whenever it was needed.
And if you live in any of these places, Larry, Matt, Alex, and Bill might know your shameful secrets.
About a month and a half ago, I'm coming up to a dumpster at an apartment complex. And outside of the dumpster, it was a suitcase that was opened. And inside the suitcase was 24 porn DVDs. And there's a couple beer cans also in the suitcase. And I'm like, that guy must have had a good night. And there's a while back, found a wallet that fell out of the dumpster. And so, you know, I'm like, well, let's see if who it is and turn it in. But in this wallet, there was no ID, but all that was in there is like these little Vegas call girl business cards. It's like, call this number for a good time and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, man. And inside is a condom. So it's like, well, at least the guy was thinking. There's one time where there's like one of those Rubbermaid containers and just dozens of Playboys poured out of there. Yeah, like people throw it away and it's like, it's discreet. Like, I don't know who's throwing it away. And it's like, yeah, it's better than someone else finding it.
When he mentioned a Rubbermaid container, Brandon, I saw you flinch like you were, like someone was coming at you with a knife. What were you expecting?
I thought he was going to say, and it was full of cum. Also, I love that he said he didn't know who's throwing it out. The wives are throwing it out. No man is going to get rid of his crazy collection of porn.
I don't know. What about the suitcase full of porn DVDs and beer cans?
Some tell me there have been two suitcases. That was the one that you found that she threw away, and he was walking off with the other one headed to a hotel. Also, he called it one night. He was like, I found a suitcase full of porn. That guy must have had a great night. And I was like, who uses their entire library in one night?
Yeah, whose night is just porn and beer? No, I shouldn't ask that question.
Yeah, you'll incriminate me.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the point of talking to garbage men, is that we're all incriminating ourselves every day with the things that we throw out. I know in my case, it's usually a mixture of beer, drug paraphernalia, shameful artifacts of like nights that I should regret, but I don't until I like hear them wheeling the can away. And I'm like, oh God, I hope he doesn't find, I don't want to admit the things that he's found on this podcast. Yeah.
I got to tell you that I have been known to take my trash to a mall or take my trash to a remote location so that I could dump it so that my neighbors don't know what I'm up to.
Oh, wow. So you're actually on the actively hiding from the garbage man.
Yeah. As soon as I saw people going through the trash for recycling, I sort of knew that they'd be able to trace that back to me because my mail is in the same trash can. Yeah. So I knew that whatever dude was going back trying to get the plastic in the glass would didn't look over at me and be like, butts. You're into butts.
I mean, that's like a wholesome thing to be into. It's the weird stuff that's like, I've had nights where I've thrown away, it sounds more interesting than it is, but like dog shit and bullets. And it's like, I know that would look weird. Like, it makes sense to me because sometimes the dog gets into the bullets and like, then you got a problem. But it's not really an incriminating story, but also anyone who comes upon that trash, like,
yeah,
I do feel the need to hide that.
Also, if they don't know that you live with a girl and they start seeing things in your trash that they're like, why would a guy have tampons? That makes no sense.
Yeah.
So the fact-seeking, nosy neighbors will look into your trash and be able to determine a lot about you. Sounds like these guys can too.
Yeah, yeah. That's part of the thing about being a garbage man, is that you've got this weird insight into everything. Like, there's nobody has secrets from the garbage man unless you're throwing your garbage out at the mall, like certain geniuses I'm meeting right now.
Drive the trash away, basically.
If it's not at your house, it's not your sin.
Right.
Yeah.
I also wonder, what's the level of how many things do they find that are alive? How many things do they find that are dead?
There are definitely some dead animal stories.
Yeah.
No live animals. Well, actually, I think there is some live animal stories that coming. But yeah, let's go on to Alex.
Going around on the recycling rounds can give you an insight, definitely, into how much someone drinks in the space of a week. Because you'll regularly come across one recycling box that's just packed to the top with bottles or cans. So you definitely, you can see size to people's lives.
I did ask Alex a question. I'm about 85% sure you asked me when we did the pre-work for this particular podcast about coming across objects in the trash that tell a complete story by themselves. And he had the best one, I think.
It was a large crate of empty vodka bottles. And in the same bin, we found a penis pump. It was one that just sticks in the mind. Because first off, I've never actually seen one apart from maybe an Austin Powers movie. So I wasn't sure how it was supposed to actually work, and then I realized with the whole vacuum and everything, just looking at it. But there was a good 5 minutes where we all stood at the back of the truck, just looking at it, sort of passing it from one person to the other, all just gazing at the mechanics of it, really. We found a shredded sex doll, so I don't want to speculate, but as if it had been, like, hacked at with a knife.
I didn't script a banter break here because I'm a fool, but we should probably talk about that.
Yeah.
We should probably drill into that one a little bit, huh?
Yeah, there's nothing worse than running up into somebody's apartment and seeing 17 bottles of full vodka and a penis pump, just in case things don't work out.
Or in case things work out. Like, right. I really want to know at what stage in the vodka drinking the penis pump was planned for. Was it like a whole, was that a whole part of the night? Was the vodka because it's uncomfortable and he needed like a painkiller?
So the vodka was for her to drink while he worked with the penis pump?
That's possible.
Okay.
I feel like when you find a crate of empty vodka bottles and a penis pump, there's probably not a woman involved.
Right. Also, what did that doll do wrong?
Yeah.
Basically, is what we want to know. Is that since those sex dolls can't seem to talk or laugh at your little penis, that doll, or the owner of that doll, was fucked up.
Well, I feel like there's two potential translations of that story. One of them is inspiring, and one of them is terrifying.
Oh, tell me of the inspiration.
Well, the inspirational one is that maybe this is someone who's had a problem, who's like the sex, his addiction to this sex doll has really been getting in the way of his ability to be happy, to like find love, to build strong, lasting relationships. And finally, he's like, you know what, I'm done with this part of my life. And he cuts up this doll as like an emotional show to himself that he's moving past this. That's the inspiring part. The other part is that maybe he's just a serial killer and this was the first step.
I love that he tried to drop it off at Goodwill first, but they told him it was too large, took it home, and tried to cut it up into smaller pieces.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, that's...
It's conservation.
It's conservation.
That's recycling at its best.
Yeah, I mean, you only got so much room in the trash can with all the vodka bottles and penis pumps. Like, you got to fit in what you can.
Shredded.
Shredded. Oof. That's just... That's so much more unsettling than if he just described it as punctured.
Yeah, I personally would dress it up. I may even take a female doll, dress it up as a man, and then throw it on the curb and see how long it takes.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I would kill it before I got rid of it. We should be able to recycle something like that.
Yeah. I also feel like that's, like, I'm not a big fan of letting the police into people's houses, but if you find a shredded sex doll in someone's trash, like, that seems like a probable cause.
Yeah, because those things are very expensive. So that's somebody who doesn't really care how much money it takes to get the knife slashes right.
Yeah. Matt has another load of garbage that tells a complete story, and I think we should probably move into that right now.
First one that popped in my head was this beginning of winter. One of our trucks was broke down, so... Boss man was riding along with me so we could double team two routes, and we were coming up downtown, and by this dumpster downtown, the dumpster's like tucked away in the corner, and so in the corner there is like a model calendar of like lovely ladies dressed up in different things, a calendar of that, a pillow, and then on the pillow there was red, brown, and yellow stains on the pillow, and both Bossman and I saw that, and we're like, oh my God, that's horrible. And cracking a little bit of fun of it, it's like, you know, guys, if the guy's jerking off and jerking blood, you know, he should probably get that checked.
Can you think of another possibility other than kind of what Matt brought up? Like, what's the best case scenario for that red, brown, and yellow pillow?
The worst is hemorrhoids while you jerk it. So what you're seeing, yeah, what you're seeing is an anal imprint, basically, a slight case of diarrhea.
Sure.
But still the gumption to go for it. I feel like if you had hemorrhoids and diarrhea, maybe the only thing that could make your day better is a little jerk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a fair point. Like when it's already that difficult, like you're not going to help things by not coming.
Yeah. There's also the implication of rough anal sex. Thank God for a pillow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like giving somebody a shake made out of cut glass and going, here's a straw. It's going to ease the transition into your mouth.
It really strikes me now that if we could do a podcast just talking to people's pillows, that would really get us some harrowing tales.
Yeah, when does a pillow no longer exist as a pillow anymore? It becomes a sponge?
Or basically. A wife.
I'm selling wife-shaped pillows on QVC if you get a chance. Wife-shaped pillows.
Brandon's good old-fashioned sex fucking pillow.
That's right. Yeah. Are you sick of your pillows talking back to you? Here's a pillow that won't.
Yeah. We've sewn its mouth shut, because if you're buying this pillow, that's what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's twice as expensive as a date, because if you're that guy, you should pay more.
Yeah. And it, you know, you're doing a service by charging that guy more, because you want to, the longer you can keep him off the street.
What's he going to do, sue me? Nobody's going to show up in small claims court and say this fuck pillow doesn't work.
Yeah.
It was too expensive.
All right. Getting back to the porn thing. I did ask Alex, our British guy. I asked him about the most porn he'd ever found in a single load, and I'm really sorry now for phrasing what I just said that way.
Did he use my name? A single load.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, what's the largest quantity of pornographic magazines you've ever seen thrown out in like one person's garbage? Like, is there, has anyone said it as like
23 lads mags?
23 lads mags.
Yeah, I think they've finished production now, actually, but yeah, it was a whole stack of Nuts magazine, which was your typical cars, women, jokes, funny pictures of guys getting kicked in the dick. Kind of magazine.
As a general rule, I'd say most of the garbage men we talked to spoke about finding other people's porn as like sort of a hazard of the job. Bill was just really happy that people were hiding it.
Never what I would call surprising quantities. Every once in a while we'd come across an old box, but you know, we're not going to touch that. It was basically, if there was somebody who was getting rid of a stash, an old box of whatever. We generally didn't look through magazines either. I mean, if it was a box and we saw magazines, we'd think, all right, well, there's no use looking through that regardless. Yeah, usually when it was say, porn or anything like that, people would box it up or keep it in a bag or keep it sort of discreet. And I think that was more of an unspoken rule to, you know, keep the kids kind of clear of that. Because if it's going to be on the street corner for any extended period of time, there are younger kids and numbers of people walking by, and that's not exactly something you want your neighbor or anybody else to see. But there were times when you could just hear the difference and feel the difference in weight picking up a small box.
Special shout out to all the people who do want their neighbors to see that.
Yeah, who are proud of it. Yeah. Who are like, they need to know.
Right. Yeah. That's how I flirt, man. I throw out like 1,000 porn mags.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is I thought that there would be much, much larger collections. Just speaking for myself.
Yeah, no, and I think that might be partly to do with the digital age. Because garbage men I talked to who did more work in like the 90s and stuff had tended to have more stories of massive quantities of porn.
Yeah.
Like as the internet came up, people were tossing their porn.
Yes.
And I think, I don't know, my first porn was coming across what I think was a stash that someone had thrown out and then kids in the neighborhood had gathered and put behind someone's house. And so there was just a stack of like 20 Playboys. And that was the first time I saw a naked woman.
It's the American pastime.
Yeah, exactly.
I think all of us find porn discarded.
Yeah, woods porn or alley
woods
porn.
Woods porn.
Yeah. You've heard about Johnny Porno Seed, right?
I love woods porn. It's that common, folks. It's called woods porn or under a bridge porn or creek. Yeah. For us, it was creek porn.
Creek porn.
Because people would throw it into
moist.
The water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the pages would stick together, but oh boy, if you could get them apart.
Just waterlogged staring pictures of naked ladies. Yeah.
Right.
When you're 12, 13, 14, and there's no internet, like that's...
Oh, jackpot.
That's heaven.
Literally.
Yeah.
Jackpot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're not proud of it, but like there's no sense being ashamed.
No, and someone was ashamed, and that sort of made it even better.
Yeah.
There is really nothing archaeologically that you will find in a landscape that will bring more joy to a group of small boys.
Yeah.
That also links them to their adulthood. It's like finding the keys to a Camaro.
Yeah. It's like everyone's own private Goonies.
Yeah.
It's like coming across that box of right. Playboys or Hustlers or whatever.
Want to see a dead booty?
Brandon, something you brought up when we were doing the pre-interview for this, you asked, like, if these guys, garbage men, frequently took stuff from the garbage, like found good things. And it turns out everybody had stories of stealing stuff from people's garbage. It actually turns out they'd kind of be fools not to. Like, I've legitimately had worse main jobs than these guys side hustle jacking stuff from the garbage. I shouldn't use jacking at this point in the podcast, but...
Nice segue.
Yeah, let's just roll. Let's just roll it.
I found a GameCube with 2 controllers and like 5 games to go along with it in a dumpster at a storage unit. And I'm like, huh, I wonder. So I brought it home, hooked it up. The thing works. And I'm like, sweet. And so I play Smash Brothers Melee on there. I found a working lava lamp, too. I have that in my son's room for when he sleeps at night. Let's see, my boss, so he found a couple interesting things while working. He told me one time that he found, I'm not good with like gun types, but he was saying that it was like an old World War II rifle in the dumpster. I wanted to show you one through like the proper channels to make sure that it was like clean and whatnot, not like part of an investigation. And then the officers were like, yeah, you know, 30 days, no one's claimed it. You got your license and whatnot. So it's all yours. So he got that. Another time he found like a replica katana he was telling me about. I'm like, oh man.
He's really excited about the replica katana.
Yeah. Yeah. Something tells me that this guy would be. Once he found a Magic the Gathering set, all the pieces. That's I thought that they would find, you know, I'm looking for the lucrative stash where they find something that's like, yeah, we found one of Michael Phelps' gold medals or... We found a couple diamond rings, but I suppose they probably won't tell us that sort of thing.
No, you wouldn't want that. I mean, the rifle's a pretty good find.
I understand that in New York, the Streets and Sanitation Bureau has a whole room devoted to the beautiful things that they find, where there's gorgeous pieces of furniture and old rugs.
Yeah, well, because they get a lot of, like, you get, like, those rent-controlled apartments that some old lady's been living in like, Manhattan for $300 a month for the last 71 years,
right.
And then she dies, and you get all this beautiful vintage stuff. Like, that's got to be a great city to pick up the trash in.
Yeah.
Bill was less excited about free katanas and didn't have any free katana stories, so I'm sorry about that. But he did have a tale of free booze.
I think the worst slash kind of best for us that we ever came across, somebody was throwing out their old liquor stash. It was bottles of still sealed and perfectly good liquor, and I had a personal motto to never take anything that was consumable, but one of my coworkers decided, well, hey, free booze.
I like that he has a personal motto not to eat from the trash, as if the rest of us had never considered the concept. Going back, the guy who put the lava lamp in his kid's room.
Yeah.
And all I could think was, how did your kid get scabies? Why does your kid have rat bites all over him?
Lava bugs.
Lava bugs. I can't. There's only a few things in the trash that I would think I'd bring back into my actual house.
You wouldn't take sealed liquor if it was good liquor. Like, what if it's clearly, like, that story says to me, somebody's an alcoholic. They like giving it up for good, but they're also like, well, this is nice stuff. I'm not going to pour it down the drain and throw it out. I'll just leave it out for whoever wants to take my sealed bottles of liquor.
Yeah. And just pour my dignity straight down the drain. I mean, I'm looking at like $20 a bottle. How much does it cost to remain fine? It's not that serious. Now, if somebody had a joint.
You'd smoke a garbage joint, but you wouldn't drink sealed garbage liquor.
Listen, man, I got my garbage menu down pat. Garbage joint, garbage Coke, garbage friends, but no garbage liquor.
Let's move on to talking about Alex's favorite trash find, our profoundly British garbage person.
You do find some stuff that could be worth money, because a lot of stuff that's thought to be broken can get kicked out. Like one instance, we found a laptop, and I don't know why it was thrown out, but we took it back home because we fished it out of the bin and turned it on, and it was working fine. So you don't get money, but you can get things. I mean, I think we sold that one on just to make a few bob, but you can definitely get substitutes for money in people's rubbish.
What are the chances that that laptop wasn't full of porn?
Also, it had to have been viral. We know that there was probably something on it that made a guy shut it, made a girl shut it, and throw it straight into the trash.
Yeah.
Or it's used in the commission of a crime.
Yeah. I feel like a laptop in the garbage that works is shadier to me than a gun in the garbage that works.
Exactly.
Because the gun, anything could be happening.
Yeah.
But there's only one reason you throw out a functioning laptop, and it's you're deeply ashamed of it.
Right. It's a Snowden type situation where you're trying to get rid of it as fast as possible. I wanted to see if they had legacy items where we looked at something like, sadly, baby gifts and then larger size children's clothing that made its way to the trash.
Sort of like the garbage man equivalent of that Hemingway three-word story, like for sale, baby shoes never worn.
Yeah. The sorrow that they must come across when they find family photo albums that are obviously very valuable to somebody, but no longer valuable to anybody.
Yeah.
All of that stuff that we accumulate that at the end of the day, people are just going to set outside.
Yeah, because what else do you do with somebody's precious memories when everybody who remembers those memories is dead as shit?
Like, right.
Yeah. That's why I'm happy that we keep that stuff on Facebook now. It just seems less depressing to know that it's eventually just going to get eaten by the cloud and gone over by digital archaeologists in 100 years if we don't burn ourselves all to death.
Yeah, and the concept that we're all curators is overrated. We're not all curators. Some of us are just collecting garbage.
Yeah, most of us are just collecting garbage. Like, that's kind of the point of our whole civilization, is like, look at how good we are at making garbage. We're so good at garbage.
Oh, I can't wait till they dig us up and they go, these people, so boring.
Yeah, so boring, so much shit. It is kind of amazing, though. Like, one of the things that's fascinating to me about the society we live in is that garbage men can make a pretty good living just selling not even the good stuff that we throw away.
There was also back then the main garbage truck driver, he would keep a couple of football hockey bags on the side of the truck, and we would throw all the cans and bottles we found. And I remember him saying that he made up to $300 in recycling per month just doing that. I mean, yeah, it was ridiculous because, you know, people, especially in a small town like this, back then there was a lot of iffiness as to whether the Bottle Depot was open or not at any given time. So I think that's still the case now, actually. But people just got kind of tired of waiting and hoarding them, and they just started throwing them out.
Like, that's not a bad side hustle, $300 a month. That's like your grocery bills for the month.
Especially since you're going that way anyway.
I mean, you're almost a fool not to. It's amazing to me that he's the only one that I've heard of who's doing that. Because, like, why wouldn't you? Like, what a waste.
Because I love that there's some guy at your office when you take the truck back, who's back at the garage, who goes, yeah, I don't want you doing that. Maybe you kick back some of those bottles to us. It's probably what happens. And there's really not a lot of room on those trucks. So it's ingenious that he figured that out.
Might be partly a small town thing, because I bet you have more trouble doing that in New York when you're, you know, your garbage truck's probably full of corpses most days. But, you know, you gotta admire a hustle. I think garbage trucks kind of vary a lot, like in how much you can fit on them and how they work depending on where they are. But Matt sort of walked me through the general way that heisting garbage tends to work.
If you talk to other people, you know that there's like several different types of garbage trucks. The two that I operate are a front load and a rear load. So I always have the better chance of like finding something cool when I'm in a rear load, because I'm more close to the garbage and actually see it cycle through, as compared to a front load where I just see the closed lids and it just all dumps in. So if I'm at a rear load backed up, and you always kind of got to like keep an eye on to see how the blade is crushing stuff and see if there's like a something hard that can possibly cause the dumpster to jump off the back of the truck. So while looking in, you know, I kind of keep an eye open for things that cross my interest, I guess. So I find a lot of extension cords, scrap aluminum and stuff like that. I pull that out because I scrap as a hobby. And so I kind of keep my eye out for that kind of stuff when I'm in a rear load, especially.
Yeah, the cords thing strikes me as genius, because that's fucking expensive, man. Yeah. Those are like fucking $20 a piece. Like,
and the weight of the copper.
Cords. Yeah, that's thinking like a meth addict right there.
That's the interesting thing that I see amongst all of them, is that there is a little fixation.
Yeah.
It almost seems like these people were compulsive shoppers, but figured out a cheaper way to do it.
To make money doing it.
Right.
Nobody we've talked to has claimed that garbage manning is like a clean job, but Matt made a pretty strong case that it's not a bad one. Here's what he thinks is best in garbage life.
Oh, man. Favorite thing. I know I always get a little excited when there's like glass and stuff, like screen doors or just like window panes of sorts, just throwing them into the back end of the truck and just seeing them smash. I'm kind of weird like that. But I like the hours, too. The hours are good plus, because we start at 4 in the morning, and then as soon as we're done with our route, roughly about like noon, we got the rest of the day, so we can like not have to worry about missing a day for a dentist appointment or going in for a checkup or whatnot, because there's a lot of time available for that. Or, you know, you can work until later in the day too. They're very flexible up here. I normally get about like 13 to 15 hours of overtime a week, just doing other things, fixing dumpsters, delivering dumpsters to new accounts and stuff. So the hours is also nice, like, and the flexibility with the hours is what I really like about this.
Interesting set of favorites there. It's a combination of breaking things and being able to go to the dentist, which is...
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is, as a kid, I loved those fluorescent tubes. I think you know is that if you come across, because they tend to all go bad at the same time. Mm-hmm. So if you come across a box of spent ones and they're 12, then you are Star Wars for days.
Oh, man. I would love putting on like hip wading pants, like the kind of the big thick pants you wear to like go fly fishing or something, and boots, and just jumping on them.
Oh,
it's so good.
I also love that they love the things that you think they would love, like just the sheer destructive force of the back of that truck.
Yeah, because I think about when I'm spending like 12 hours at a day on and off of a laptop or in meetings and stuff, like it would be good to just stand on a moving truck and break things.
Yeah.
That's like a little bit of your Mad Max fixation right there. And you're,
Is there anyone that they look down on? Because everybody says the lowest job that you can have is garbage man, even though we know that it probably pays well. But is there anybody that garbage people are just like, huh, you think we're garbage people? Those guys are garbage people.
I think they're pretty free of judgment. I think when I don't think they see themselves as the bottom rung of things. I think there's a little bit of pride in like knowing like this all goes to shit. It's like whenever the garbage men in New York go on strike, the city's uninhabitable.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of nice, knowing that, like if I don't do my job, people will read other articles on the internet or whatever. They'll listen to other podcasts. But, you know, these guys, society collapses without them. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. If I don't do my job, people will just watch two monkeys fuck and be just as satisfied.
That's really, it's either Brandon Johnson's comedy or monkeys fucking for your fan base.
Exactly.
Wow. It's important that you know that.
Yeah. You got to know where you live.
I'm really curious as to how that demographic research looked. Did you like hire out to Gallup for that, or?
I just noticed that people who clicked on my things also seemed to click on other animal videos.
It was one of those YouTube things.
Yeah, and I thought maybe they think I'm a talking monkey. Either way, keep watching.
No, everybody needs a niche. All right, so Larry, who again was a garbage man back in the gross, dirty days of the 70s, which is like the garbage of time periods,
yeah,
didn't have any stories about stealing good shit because it was the 70s and nothing was good. But he
toxic.
Did have yeah, toxic. Everything was lead. But he did have one story of attempted banditry that's pretty fucking great.
One time I was driving down the road in a trash truck, and this guy came up behind me with the police lights on, pulled me over, and said that one of my lights on the truck was out. And he was going to have to fine me $50. And I thought, oh, man, this is terrible. And I said, well, I don't have $50. And he said, well, how about $5? And I realized at that point that, you know, this guy was trying to rip me off. He ended up getting arrested for impersonating a police officer. And I ended up having to testify against him in court. So whether or not he got convicted, I don't know. But, you know. It happened.
Yeah, he got convicted. I'm pretty sure he got convicted. If you're too stupid to, that was 90% off, basically, is what he said to him.
Yeah.
Am I doing the math right?
Which is a great deal.
Yeah,
it's a
great deal.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's a 70s story for sure.
Yeah.
You can't get away with, nobody even tries to pretend to be a cop like that anymore. Like, also, not in this country.
Also, $5 doesn't go as far. So when he was like, $5, I was like, doesn't it cost more to run the fake police car than $5?
No, because this is the 70s, so that's like, what, $700, $800? Yeah, like you could buy an Atari for $5 back then. $50 would have been a car payment.
I honestly would have been afraid of the trash in the 70s, because there would have been dioxin, lead, all sorts of PCBs and CFCs and that stuff.
Yeah, and like people, too.
Yeah.
Like the murder rate was sky high back then.
Yeah.
Like, I bet you're finding arms. I mean... Larry didn't admit to finding arms, which is, you know, my biggest regret of this podcast. But he did have some really, really fucking gross stories for all the filthy animals out there who want to hear them.
The two most horrible things that I ever had to pick up was I had to pick up trash at a fish market. So they used to put in the trash cans fish guts. So fish guts not only are fishy, stinky smelling things, they're also liquid, so they're very heavy. It was difficult for me to lift them up, and sometimes you spill fish juice all over the place, which means all over you.
Oh,
yeah.
Liquefied fish
guts.
So gross.
Have you ever gotten covered in liquefied fish parts?
I did have to clean a grease trap.
Oh, Jesus.
And if you've had to clean a grease trap, you know that that's eons of garbage.
Yeah.
And it's the garbage that cannot get through the pipe, which means it's fat and food and flesh.
How long did it take you to get the smell out of your skin afterwards?
We wear complete rubber suits.
Oh, this was like a job thing.
This is a biohazard.
Oh, shit.
When you get into a sink like that, it's warm because it's brimming with bacteria.
Yeah.
And any of it touching you or getting up your nose would be a nightmare. It's the trash of about 2 years of a restaurant, just the liquid.
So was your job just cleaning out the grease traps or were you, wow.
Well, no, I worked in the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
I volunteered because I'd never done anything like it, and people said, it's the worst thing in the world. It's the worst thing in the world.
And you got to try that thing.
You got to try it.
When somebody says this is the worst thing in
the
world.
They give you waiters.
Because
you have to get in it.
Yeah, you'd have to. Oof. Yeah, I got covered in fish once I fought a guy with a salmon and a beltfish once.
Like, of course.
Yeah, we had a thing where we wanted to he'd play this video game as a kid, my friend, where one of the weapons you could unlock was a salmon and you could beat people. It was a Dynasty Warriors game. And he was like, I always wanted to try that. And I was like, that sounds like a great idea. So we bought two 4-foot salmon and we each picked an offhand weapon. He got a monkfish head that he used as a shield, stuffed his hand through the esophagus.
Of course.
And I got a beltfish to use as a whip. And we showed up at this park in broad daylight in Dallas and just started beating the shit out of each other with fish. And it took a good 2 days of showers, four or five showers over the course of 2 days to get all of that off before we didn't smell like fish.
So lucky no one got sick.
I mean, we were both pretty, got a lot of infected cuts and scrapes because we were bleeding pretty heavily. There's some kid's birthday party next door, too. There's video out there somewhere of it. I'm sure people online can find it. If you've ever wondered whose responsibility it was to look at badly engrossed dumpsters and go, sweet Christ, enough is enough, this has to end. Well, it's the garbage man's job to fix that shit up.
There's this one dumpster up here. They cater to a lot of food trucks in the area, and they throw a lot of their unused meats and stuff in there, and I don't know why it's just this one, but this one reeks horribly bad. I know that there's been a time or two where we had to exchange the dumpster, to a new one, so that way they have one that's not as bad smelling. And then there's also another one at a Indian restaurant as well, and that one also has a pretty potent smell behind it.
Wait, so they actually, like, you guys, if one of these bins gets too rank and horrifying, like, you guys can call in to have it replaced?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've done that before. It's really the customers that call it in to get replaced for a smell. This ain't the only dumpster that we had to switch because of the smell. If they call, it's like, hey, man, this smells really bad. I mean, there's sometimes what we do is we have this, like, industrial deodorizer. It smells like vanilla, and you, like, take about a cup of it and pour it in the bottom of the dumpster, and it's supposed to help neutralize the smells. But it doesn't work all the time, so if it doesn't work, then we got to swap it out because they just smell so bad, and the customers just don't want that near them because, I don't know, I guess they have a pretty good radius of where you can smell them. When I get out of the truck, like, as soon as I take that first step out, I could smell that first one that I was talking about that caters to the food trucks in the area.
I live down the street from a sushi restaurant.
Oh, dear.
So for about 3 months every summer, you know exactly how much business they're doing.
Yeah.
The worst are amusement parks and county fairs because they are full of funnel cake and ice cream and divorce and depression. And they stink to high heaven.
Well, and a lot of sick kid puke, which I feel like the acid on that decomposes everything faster. And so you've got, like, it's one thing to throw away Cheerios, but if there's puke going on top of the Cheerios...
It's the world's worst ceviche.
Oh, my God.
It's just awful. Honestly, it makes you not want to go to certain parks in certain times of the year. So if you're in the middle of the country and you're at a Six Flags in Missouri... Stay away in August because it smells like the lack of hope.
Don't go to a Six Flags in Missouri would be like, if I ever had a son, that would be the thing I got engraved on the pocket watch that I gave to my buddy in Vietnam to hide up his asshole. So just so to know that that piece of information would reach him.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So yeah, obviously garbage manning, it's not the most dangerous job in the world. We're talking to people, you know, for this podcast who've done sketchier things. But it is the job with the highest danger, other than maybe doctors, of disgusting shit winding up in your face.
I've never known such a spectacle as a metal blade crushing down with the force of tons and pinching a carton or plastic carton of rotten milk, because when it does, the lid just stays on for as long as possible and then pops off, and it shoots this 6 foot jet of rancid milk over your shoulder and out onto the street behind you. And there's nothing you can do because you can't see inside the bags. It's only as when you put it in the back of the truck and the blade comes crushing down, they all just pierce through the bag and shoot rancid milk everywhere. And one day I didn't stand out of the way and it went all over my shirt, caused me to gag. And yeah, that's rotten milk was always one to watch out for.
He said one day. He didn't say this happened to me twice. That is how you learn that lesson.
Yeah, and you don't need to learn that lesson twice. Yeah. One of the things this has taught me is I'm going to try not to throw out rancid milk anymore. That's going down the drain first. I'm not going to throw any more full cartons of milk away. Like, now the garbage man is human to me. So
yeah.
I'm ashamed of what he knows, but I also, like, care about not having that happen to anyone. I don't want to be that on my conscience.
Also, I don't use the huge bags. I use a smaller trash can.
Oh, you're a wee bagger.
I'm a wee bagger because what we know is if you drop a piece of chicken from a salad that you didn't finish at the bottom of, say, like a 13-gallon,
yeah,
you're not going to remember to take it out. You're just going to think, I've got all week for this. When I was a kid, we threw out a whole chicken. Ugh. My mother made the mistake of giving it to me to throw out. I hid it in the backyard. It became infested with maggots.
Of course.
I told kids I had a show in my backyard. And then every day, because I lived in the South and it was hot, every day I'd be like, who wants to come see how far the maggots have progressed? Now, a little something in the back of my throat just telling the story.
Yeah. No, it's that the sound of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something special. Speaking of special stories, Bill has... just a real motherfucker on one for us now.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of limitations on what somebody could throw out back then. I remember there were times when it took three of us, three grown men who would do that, to pick up one garbage can.
And I think the worst one was an oil-soaked quilt. I'm not sure how somebody decided that was a fun thing to do, but this garbage can was loaded up with half full of cat litter that was, again, oil-soaked, which obviously somebody had tipped over a barrel of oil of some sort.
Like baby oil? Gasoline oil? Like what a...
Engine oil.
Oh, my gosh.
Somebody must have been working in their home garage or been changing the oil to their vehicle and couldn't catch it all, so... There was a quilt in there. I'm not kidding. An actual like bed quilt, not something that would be specifically used for picking up oil, but it must have just been, hey, we could get rid of this, use it to clean that up.
I got him beat.
Oh boy.
So again, I come from a hot, hot section of the world, and I have to tell you that one of the worst ideas you've ever had is to take a small trash can and put it under a sink and say, "Don't flush your tampons." Put them in the small trash can under the sink. The second worst idea you've ever had is not to check and see if that sink has a leak. Because then you get is woman soup and then add 98 degree days to it. Throwing that out is something that I will always fondly cherish.
Yeah, that's a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm talking lots of ladies.
You're
in a dorm.
You're an adult when that happens.
Yeah. you suddenly go, there are no more questions.
There's a whole hero's journey just in taking out that trash.
Yeah. Hot woman soup.
Oof. Talk about meeting the goddess.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, some people say that period blood is magical. I can tell you folks, it is not.
Nothing's magical after a couple of 98 degree days. Right. Yeah.
And a trash can full of water to cook it in.
Oh, jeez. Well, garbage is a lot more than rotting cans of tampons or rotting fish or rotting anything else. It's also just like rotting humanity. So it can be pretty heartbreaking, as Matt illustrates here.
There's been a couple times that you see like a dead rabbit thrown in there and whatnot, and There's a cat that was just thrown into a dumpster one time. Someone else, they were dumping a dumpster, and they found a dog, a pit bull, that was just thrown into the dumpster up here. And my heart broke. I'm like, who could do that?
I got a story for that one.
Yeah.
When I was I grew up for a while in like rural Oklahoma. And so we were out in a little farm in the middle of nowhere. And one of our neighbors, he was like a mile or so away, but down the road was just a guy. You couldn't see his house from the road. It was one of those isolated places, a bunch of no trespassing signs. But every now and then there would just be a sack of dead chickens out front. Like, and it wasn't like this guy had chickens and sometimes they died. It was like a cockfight. Like these were torn the fuck up chickens. It was really clear, like, well, these chickens aren't dying. Honestly, I mean, honorably,
these chickens are being murdered.
These chickens are being, or murdering each other. Like, I don't know. I don't know how much blame you place on the chickens for a cockfight.
I also love that when he found that pit bull in the trash, there was just a cat looking out the window like, it's what happens.
Yeah.
It's what happens.
Either that or just like happy that it got away with it.
Yeah. We really don't know what to do with our pets when they die, because I know that you can call in and have them scooped up and picked up. But I also think that you're distraught, and you're so very distraught that you just want it to go away.
I feel like the only way I want to dispose of a pet I love is like the Viking Jedi, sort of just light it on fire. Like that's the right way to do anything that's dead.
Send it out into the lake.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Into the lake.
Yeah, send it out into the lake. It's on its own funeral pyre. It's done.
Yeah, because it's a tragedy, but also how many chances do you get to light a corpse on fire in the lake? Like, you got to take that.
Speak for yourself.
But yeah, that kind of leads us into the fact that garbage men are getting a look at the little daily tragedies of 1,000 people a day. Like that's something that's fascinating to me about this job, and Larry kind of illustrates what that looks like on a broad basis here.
You know, you go past one day and all of a sudden the couch and the TV set and everything is out on the front lawn where it wasn't there before. So obviously there was some kind of financial problem there that made the person have to leave the house.
And, you know, at the very least, you're kind of getting an oblique view of death, as Alex illustrates.
Every now and then, you know, the areas that have a high population of quite old people. And every now and then you'll come to a place that just has bags completely filled with clothes on the side. You have regulars because we're always there early morning. And all the old people used to get up early and used to come out and have regular chats with us as we were doing the rounds. And then there was a couple of people where you just noticed that they're not coming out anymore.
They are the first people to know. I wonder if they're the first people to spot trends. I wonder if the data that they, the sort of ghetto data that they amass, can be used.
I'm certain that garbage men were the first people who knew when the pog craze died down.
Yeah.
Like, just sacks and sacks of pogs.
That's right.
I don't know why pogs is what I jumped to with that, but
they were also the first people to identify Zima as an awful, awful drink, only finding it in McMansions.
And clear Pepsi.
Right, yeah. Right. Full cans of clear Pepsi being thrown out daily.
Cases.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, it's probably not surprising hearing all that this job changes people. And Alex kind of got into that a little bit for us, just how this has impacted him as a person forevermore.
It's definitely changed some of my actions. I'm a regular smoker, and before I was a bin man, I was always happy to just, after I finished my cigarette butt, I'd just throw it on the floor. But there was one day where I actually had to go into my local town and just do normal litter picking duties with the little claw mechanism, and just picking up cigarette butts around the bin where people hadn't put them in the ashtray. The amount of hassle that was compared to other things that I had to pick up, because you can easily just grab a whole bunch of litter with this one mechanism, but cigarette butts, you have to do it one at a time, one at a time. And after that, if I ever finished what I was smoking, I would always just keep hold of what was left until I ended up at a bin. But it's definitely given me sort of more respect for what people were going to be dealing with afterwards. So even though I'd never done it, while I was on one of my rounds, I picked up a bag and it was full of vomit and it exploded all over my leg. And since then, I've never thrown up in a bin. I've always tried to just aim for something that can be flushed away rather than risk spraying it all over someone's leg.
So remember, people, storm drains, not trash cans, if you're going to puke.
Also, puke on something that can be thrown away and is absorbent.
Yeah.
Maybe puke on a towel.
Yeah.
Versus just puking straight into all of it.
Yeah, or into a sack and then throwing the sack away.
Which you probably would find out who was bulimic.
Yeah. I would, one of the things that's interesting to me, like, we talk about the, like, how many lives cigarettes cost just from the people they kill, but I'm wondering, like, how many equivalents of human lives are lost every year in time spent picking up cigarette buds?
Right. Right. Just the sheer hours.
Which of those numbers is higher?
Right. Right. The good news is the people who litter like that won't be around much longer if they keep littering like that.
Yeah.
You know, I went to, I hate to say it, but I went to a festival that rhymes with Earning Man.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a great attention focused on taking everything that you have. So when he was talking about with the cigarette butts, I was an ex-smoker, and we cannot put our cigarettes out on the playa. So you can put them out, but you have to take them with you. And what I was amazed by was that 30,000 people were able to scrub a desert clean, and there was no trace of them whatsoever other than tire tracks.
We're actually going to get into Burning Man a little bit later.
Oh, awesome.
But yeah, I think one of the best things, I've been doing Burning Man regional events for the last decade or so of my life, and the best thing that it's done for me is I know exactly how much garbage I put out in a week of being a person. Like,
yeah.
You get an exact, like, oh, this is me. This is like my personal trash. We'll get into that later. Right now, we're going to talk about how Larry thinks garbage manning gave him sort of a crash course in regular manning.
Well, when you think about it, I was a 15-year-old idiot when I first started, and I was kind of flabby and that kind of thing. And it taught me a lot of things. It taught me how to be responsible, because at the end of the day, you have to pick up all the trash. If all the trash doesn't get picked up, it's not like you can tell somebody else, well, you know, you have to go pick up this truck. You have to do it. So, you know, it was a matter of, if you filled up the truck because you pack the thing inefficiently, then you had to go to the dump, which was an hour each way, and then come back and finish the job when actually you wanted to go to sleep because you were working since 3 o'clock in the morning.
Outside of the brutal hours, one of his other anecdotes gives us a hint as to how this gig sort of ages the soul of a man.
There was a gentleman who lived in one of the houses on my roof, and every morning I saw him, and he was standing by his door at 5 o'clock in the morning in girl's underwear. And he would wave to me, and I thought, isn't that kind of funny? Why would somebody want to do something like that? And it wasn't until I got a little bit older that I realized that some people like to do that kind of stuff.
Which is, it's nice that Bill, considering the generation he comes from, seems to be at a place free of judgment.
He's seen a lot.
He's
seen a lot. So Colonel Kurtz wouldn't necessarily shock him.
No. I think Colonel Kurtz might learn a thing or two from these people. What's worse, living in the jungles of Vietnam, fighting a brutal insurgency with the Montagnards, or having a milk carton of rancid milk sprayed in your face by some sort of horrible machine knife?
I think you see everybody's morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that people choose to start their day is something that you become accustomed to witnessing.
And that's not when any of us are at our best.
No.
I mean, I'm sure maybe I don't know anybody who's at their best then.
They probably can successfully predict a divorce because they see a guy running out with a coffee and a half-eaten donut who's not looking back at his wife.
Yeah.
And then they come back, you know, maybe a year later, and there is two sets of garbage on each side.
I don't know how to do a clean segue. We're going to talk about puking on the job now. Bill considered it a literal rite of passage, and let's just dive into this story.
One of the first or second days that I did it, it was almost a rite of passage in a way. It was third or fourth house in, and I had not really gotten the idea of don't breathe through your nose because it would be terrible. So I opened one up, and I was a little bit physically tired because, for example, the guy that I worked with, he gained 20 pounds of muscle in the first 3 months that he had done that job, and he was the main garbage man. So that's an idea of just how physically challenging that job could be at times. But I was physically tired. I wasn't used to it quite yet. I think it was my second or third day out. I'd opened up a can, and it was just terrible. And there weren't as many bylaws regarding what we should or shouldn't take. So basically, as long as you could lift it, and as long as, you know, everything was in the can when we would take it. So I opened it up, and I grabbed that, and I'm gagging a little bit, and put it back down. I jump on the side of the truck, and as we're going around the corner, I just kind of decide, all right, it's coming out now. And luckily, it was in the street and not on somebody's lawn, because the garbage truck was still moving. I wasn't going to jump off and try to get it in the back. I just kind of turned my head to the side, and there's a nice little streak on the road.
Oh, his sound almost made me yak.
Yeah.
It's pretty accurate.
No, I have a feeling he's got that burned into his brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love also that he did not miss a beat. He waited for them to turn a corner, and then he just let go.
Yeah, that's how you have to do it. Yeah. Like, you're not going to puke in the trash can, because nobody, even if your job is trash, you don't want to work surrounded by your own vomit. Even if it's not the only vomit in the truck that day. I get that. The changes that garbage manning wreaks upon you can be, you know, as intense as, you know, altering how you deal with your cigarettes and your garbage for the rest of your life. But they can also be as subtle as, you know, killing your appreciation for Panda Express, which actually might be a little bit more of a kindness.
There's this Mongolian grill up here, and we haul their garbage for them. It's like an all-you-can-eat, you pay, and you go walk around the grill and whatnot, and they cook your food for you. But not everybody finishes all their food. And then the excess that's on the grill, they like scrape into the middle, and that also gets collected and thrown into the dumpster. But the combination of both, like the uneaten food and that grease from the grills that go into the dumpster, have made me stay away from this Mongolian grill, yeah, for like 2 years. I tried it at first because my best friend, he loves this place, but it's like, oh, man, it's kind of hard to go there and, like, stomach through the stuff after you see the garbage of just, like, all the slop combined together.
It's one of the reasons that they don't want you to eat behind Chinese food restaurants is the levels of MSG can make you very, very sick. So the greatest story is that there were employees of this place who were told, don't eat the food that we throw out. And they did. And then within 3 days, that household got very, very sick because they had insane levels of MSG. Good for one meal, not good for back to back to back to back.
There was a brief period of my life where I put MSG in everything. When I figured out, when I realized it was just like a salt that just makes stuff better. Like I tried it in lemonade. It was like, I'm sure that it took years off my life, but I guess it must be so much more concentrated at a place like that. They probably measure it in pounds a day.
Yeah, the salt content as well is something that... You remember that McDonald's used to throw out their burgers and people would go through the trash because their burgers were... This is a crazy time in history, but they used to make burgers fresh and then they'd throw them away after 2.5 minutes. So you could hang out at the back of McDonald's in a major city and you could eat all day. And then eventually their food had so much stuff in it that homeless people were like, I'm good. Yeah. I'm good. I'll take my chances with this rat carcass.
At least it's organic.
Right.
Yeah, grass-fed. One thing all of our sources shared is that their time on the job has made them, they felt at least, less wasteful people.
I think I'm a lot less wasteful of a person because, like I said, I scrap on the side. Like, I recycle here, paper, aluminum, and we don't have much for glass, so we don't really recycle glass in my apartment. At least my girlfriend and I don't. But I definitely donate a lot of our stuff that we don't use anymore. So it's like don't throw unnecessary stuff away. Always try and like donate it or scrap it, break it down, and then just make a little extra on the side kind of thing.
And it turns out that's actually a pretty normal reaction to spending a shitload of time around garbage. For some perspective on this, I talked to Dr. Gregory Smith. He teaches anthropology at Northwest College, and he's also a garbologist, at least for like part of the year.
Name is Greg Smith, and I am an instructor of anthropology at Northwest College in Powell, Wyoming. And basically my day job is teaching anthropology courses all day long, all kinds of different courses, including archaeology, which is sort of my specialization. My background is in archaeology, and garbology is using archaeological methods and principles, and instead of studying an ancient civilization, you're studying today's civilization. Whereas, you know, traditionally archaeologists use things like pieces of pottery or stone tools to learn about past societies. The idea behind garbology is you're using modern garbage to study, you know, contemporary society.
I'm picturing him as like Hobo Indiana Jones in my head with a bindle that he keeps his whip and his gun in, and instead of a hat, one of those New York style hobo jackets where it's like a big oilskin coat or something like that that's just like perpetually dirty.
I gave him a white lab coat with brown, yellow, and red stains all over it, and half a bow tie.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. The pictures that popped up in either of our heads. Yeah.
Right.
But garbology is sort of his side hustle, only he uses it to drum up extra knowledge instead of extra cash, so it's less of a hustle and more of a public service. But I like the phrase side hustle.
And so I think just doing my garbology project, which is essentially what we do, is just once a year, I look at one day's worth of campus garbage. So I work with the custodians here on campus, and they take all the garbage from the previous day, and instead of throwing it in the dumpster, they give it to me, basically. So we analyze it, and we basically kind of sort things out between what could have been recycled but was thrown in the garbage and what is actual garbage. And so I've been doing this for a few years now, just to kind of get a sense of how much recyclables are we as a campus community throwing away. And I started doing this, and, you know, we actually start doing things like count up the number of plastic containers that are winding up in the garbage. Once you start doing that, what you realize is that I think, like, I'll have to check my data, but I think on average we're throwing something like 400 plastic containers in the garbage. And if you extrapolate those numbers over a school year, you get like these astonishing figures of, you know, something like 90,000 plastic containers, most of which are like, you know, Coke bottles or water bottles. That we're throwing into the garbage. And then you realize that this is, I work for a very small college. We have a student body that's maybe 1,800 students. So it's a very small little college, and it makes you realize, you know, just the scope of how much stuff is being just kind of thrown away. One of the most powerful things that I see is in my students, and especially the students that helped me out on this day where we're doing the garbology project. At the end of the day, what we've got are mounds of recycling, you know, like hundreds of plastic containers, garbage cans full of cardboard and paper and metal cans. And students really, you know, see just like, oh, wow, like this is just one day on the campus. And you can, you know, they're just like floored at how much, you you know, because of course people don't really think twice about throwing their water bottle, you know, in the garbage. But once you see the accumulated effects of that over the whole campus, yeah, a number of students have come up to me, and it's not like I'm, you know, trying to convert these students to being, you know, hardcore recyclers or anything, but it does, you know, affect them, or at least some of them. And they've told me afterwards, like, oh yeah, I've never thrown a plastic bottle in the garbage after the day that I helped you. Just seeing it all, you know, mounded up there, like the visual impact of it was pretty powerful. So that's kind of satisfying, just, you know, being able to demonstrate, not by telling students, oh, you know, you should recycle, but just showing them the scope of the problem of just all this stuff that, you know, winds up destined for a landfill somewhere. So that's been kind of a rewarding element of the project.
You know, by weight, there's nothing that this country exports more of than garbage.
And is that what mostly fills our seas?
Yeah.
As well?
Yeah. There's a pile of garbage the size of Texas and growing in the middle of, I think it's the Atlantic. Like, it's incredible how much shit we throw out. I lived in India for a couple of months in New Delhi back in 2013. And one of the first things you have to get used to when you're there is throwing everything on the ground, from cigarette butts to cans of water to like everything. And like, sometimes you'll be in a restaurant and you'll try to find a trash can, you'll put it in the trash can, you'll see them dump the trash can out into the street. Because there's, like, on the outskirts of New Delhi, it looks like, you remember Idiocracy? How it's just like skyscrapers and piles of garbage?
Yes.
That's literally what it looks like in parts. And like the slums of New Delhi, it's just like oceans of
Brazil
trash.
Brazil as
any place where there's just too much garbage and not enough governmental infrastructure or whatnot to take care of it. And so it's one of those, like, it's easy when you're there to be like, oh, wow, this is so wasteful. It's so much cleaner here in the United States. But then you look at how much garbage we put out, and I think it's something like 4 to 8 times as much trash per person as they do in India. And I honestly think, like, it might be healthier the way they do it, just throwing it in the street, because at least then you know what you're putting out into the world. Nobody in New Delhi has any illusions about how much garbage human beings add to the world. But here,
the level of epidemic, though, that must occur because of open garbage out on the streets. Is there a better industry in India? Like, did somebody, my theory had always been that if you throw garbage on the street, that creates a job. Is that true?
It does. Trash pickers are a job all around the world. It's big in Brazil. It's big in Egypt. It's big in India, particularly. Africa, big communities. But a lot of what they're mining isn't their own garbage, because most of their garbage is like bottles, plastic jugs, like paper and stuff. What they mine is our garbage, because we ship our electronic waste to foreign countries. So there's generations of people who mine our old computers, our old cell phones for precious metals and stuff. And they have sky-high cancer rates. It's really bad for a lot of them, except for, like, some of them get really good at it. The Zabalin in Egypt are they're like a weird Christian sect, so they're kind of isolated from the rest of the community in Cairo as a result of that. And so it's become like their ancestral duty to just take care of the city's trash, and they're the most efficient recyclers in the world. These people with just hand tools and whatnot do a better job of recycling modern garbage than any recycling plant in the United States. And like, they're so efficient that when they get organic waste, they don't just put that in a landfill. They feed that to pigs, and then they butcher pigs, and then they sell pork. They've used this garbage to actually create like a sustainable economy that's more sustainable than the city around them. So yeah, it's fascinating.
It did seem like at one time we were making the kind of garbage that could be recycled. It seems like as we grow as a population and as a planet, we start to make things that cannot be broken down.
Or things that can't be broken down or have to be mined to break down. Like, there's a lot of stuff in our cell phones that there's only a finite amount of whatever metals in the world. So at some point, somebody's going to have to get it and start digging that around if we want to keep making iPhones, which is why this happens. And one of the consequences of that is that, like, you know, we've got people mining it so we don't run out, but also those people mining it are often children and they're going to get cancer because you shouldn't be cracking open iPhones. It's a mess. And it's interesting when we talk about the subject of garbology. Greg talked to me a little bit about Bill Rathje, who's the guy who sort of invented it as a discipline. He was the first dude who started like looking into how much stuff we threw out. He's the guy who found out that people underreport alcohol consumption by like 60%. Here's Greg sort of talking about the backstory to that.
Since I started this project, I've kind of done a little bit more background research into garbology and just kind of how it started, at least in the United States, and what different projects have done. I mean, I know as far as I can tell, at least in archaeology, that the first garbologist is a guy named Bill Rathje. I don't know if you've come across his name yet, but basically what Rathje was up to, I think he started in Tucson and then he worked at the Fresh Kills landfill in New York City for a while. And so, I mean, he was doing things like not only getting, you know, permission from residents in Tucson of, you know, going through their garbage and then asking them questions, you know, about their, you know, habits so that he can compare what people say they do versus what they actually do. But I think he was also doing, you know, systematic borings, like actually going to the landfill and, you know, doing deep borings into the landfill and seeing what pops up and kind of getting a sense of, like, you know, just what is in our landfills.
And it's through Bill Rathje that we as a civilization, like, came to actually understand what's going on in our landfills. Because, like, what you'd guess is that it's mostly plastic and styrofoam and baby diapers. I think that would be most people's assumption. I mean, what would you guess?
Well, I always heard the phone book thing, that you could find out the difference between years and what was in between layers of phone books. I know that we don't do phone books anymore, so it's going to be interesting to see how they date it.
Here's Greg talking about, like, what they actually found when they started boring through this stuff.
I think that the biggest surprises that I can remember off the top of my head are things that we think are, you know, biodegradable. You know, once they get stuck in these landfills, that, you know, there's just not a lot of opportunity for rotting to occur. So you wind up with, like, newspapers that are just, like, not deteriorating at all. There's, like, thousands of pounds of newspaper that winds up in these landfills. So that's the kind of thing that I know Rasty was doing. And I'm not really sure if there's other people now that are doing that kind of work. I do know of a couple of colleagues that are doing at least a little bit more systematic garbage audits. Like, most of them are on campuses. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my take on what other projects have done, and most of them are just kind of inspired by Rathje's original work. And I think, and I'd have to check, you know, one of the reasons why it's changed is because of Rathje's work, right? So he was able to go to these landfills and say, hey, look, you know, 40 or 50% of the volume of your landfill is, you know, paper or something like that. And so I think that's kind of changed the way that landfill operators have approached, you know, trying to figure out ways that they can facilitate, you know, the decomposition of organic stuff like paper. On the other hand, of course, we've seen the explosion of, you know, bottled water since then too. So one wonders, you know, what proportion of our total landfills are now, you know, those water bottles or those plastic K-cup coffee things and stuff like that, which didn't even exist back then. And I know that's certainly what I'm seeing in my recycling project, is just like the overwhelming, you know, number one item that we're pulling out of the garbage are those plastic bottles. It's just astonishing how many that we're pulling out every year.
What's crazy to me is if you live in an island country like Japan or the UK, they have to have limits on what can come in because they just don't have the volume.
Yeah.
So I wonder if those countries have led the way in terms of recycling and use and storing their garbage.
They've made Japan larger by using garbage to add on to the island. Like, they have added land that they can put houses on now.
Smart.
Because what else are we going to do with it? It's going to go into the ocean eventually, like everything. The thing he brings up that, like, makes me the angriest are those fucking K-cups, because it's such a garbage product. Like, it's not, it'd be one thing if it was the cheapest way to get coffee, but it's the most expensive way to get coffee outside of going to Starbucks every day. It'd be one thing if it was really easier, but, like, are you really going to tell me that, like, that's less work than just pouring coffee in a French press and some hot water? Like, it's not, either way, you're adding water to a thing, you're putting a thing in the thing, and you're waiting for it to get hot.
Yeah.
What is the benefit of that?
Yeah, and you would think that they would have made it out of something that was disposable, since we are in the future.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do going forward.
Yeah. There are always names like Green Mountain. It's not going to be a fucking Green Mountain for long if you keep throwing K-cups and everything.
Like, right. I also love that we heard this almost 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And that those machines are getting made cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and that device is not slowing down.
No, and it's the worst. Like, that's the apocalypse story I want to see someone from Hollywood make. Like, not us being killed by zombies or a virus, but just, like, somebody invents the most wasteful product in the world and we just drown in an ocean of our own refuse, which also, I guess, is happening.
Also, rich people seem to have the kind of garbage that breaks down, whereas I think the poorer people do not. I wonder if class plays a part.
I'm sure it does. And that's what, I guess that's what's interesting about the K-cups to me. Cause usually I think it is that way, is that like, there's a lot of poor people, like you go to a lot of parts of the so-called third world and like everybody, a lot of people use plastic bottles and stuff cause the water's not safe. And that's not their fault that they're making, like, they just want to not get sick from the water. I can't blame them for that. But like, poor people aren't using K-cups.
No.
Like, it's way more expensive to get your coffee that way. Like, that's one where it's like purely the middle class creating a problem that there doesn't need to be. But I think you're probably right in general that it's one of those things like Gwyneth Paltrow can afford to not create any waste.
Also, doesn't have the kind of schedule necessarily that would dictate her having to have her coffee made quickly. And it would be interesting to know if there's a transition from poor to rich. Is that in that middle, as we make that climb, do we acquire too much and do we spend in a way that is not reusable?
I suspect we probably do, because you look at, like, if you're really poor, you're not buying a lot of furniture. You're not buying a mat. You're not buying any of that stuff unless you absolutely have to. You're getting hand-me-downs. You're taking it off the street. You're going to like garage sales, estate sales. Like, you're doing whatever you can to keep your house, get the stuff you need in your house and not pay for it. You're middle class, upper middle class. You're going to IKEA. You're going to Walmart. You're buying crappy furniture that breaks after a year and a half. And you probably just throw it in the dumpster when you move if, you know, you crack a leg trying to move it. So yeah, I think there is like it's a parabola of waste.
Because rich people have heirlooms. Mm-hmm. And when rich people buy something, it's something that will either rise in value or not decrease in value.
Yeah, because I used to throw out probably a couch and a couple of chairs every 2 years because it was IKEA shit and it would just break. And now that I am not that poor, like I have a nice couch. I have chairs that like I want to keep because I like them. And so they're also not made out of balsa wood.
Yeah, they are things that will develop equity, basically.
It all comes down to class, like everything, I guess, does. Yeah.
So sometimes the worst thing that can happen to a society is actually that it becomes affluent. It's interesting because the impact that it has on that environment suddenly becomes predatory.
And that's what we're seeing happen in a lot of India, China, these countries where they have this massive middle class, and it's not as a proportion of the country as big as our middle class, but as an actual number of people. Like, India's middle class is 300 million people. Like, that's in America, worth of people who are all buying useless shit now, whereas before, poor people in India, like, they're not generating a lot of waste. They're not throwing a lot of couches away.
Yeah, like, it's interesting because it creates its own problem that we're all first-time wealthy.
Yeah. Like, really, as a species, we just finally got, like, a couple hundred bucks in our pocket. Yep. Yeah, we got that stimulus check from civilization. One of the things Greg sort of brought up when he was looking at this is how like his work in Central America and Mexico has sort of synthesized with his work in garbology. I don't know. I'm not describing this well. I'm just going to run Greg's clip.
Well, I've done a lot down in Yucatan. So this is the Maya civilization and mostly in northern Yucatan. So not too far from the famous site of Chichen Itza is where I've done a lot of work. And yeah, there, you know, what's nice is that besides the irritating jungle that you have to clear off of your archaeological sites, the soils are so thin there, you can actually do a lot of archaeology without doing a lot of digging because the artifacts are just on the surface and the soils are so thin that, you know, you don't really have to work hard to find artifacts. So yeah, you know, what I've been doing in the past is just doing simple surface collections of ceramics from these like ancient Maya houses where basically what they look like are, they would be like pole and thatch huts. And what you find now are like the platforms that they would build these pole and thatch huts on. And like most societies, you know, once a pot broke, whether it was like a water jar or a serving dish or a bowl or whatever, you know, they just kind of dumped it out into the backyard and they would have these big garbage mounds that would pile up over the years. And of course, that's a treasure for archaeologists because you can, you know, look at the ceramics and figure out, you know, what time period the site dates to. You can figure out, you know, what kinds of activities they were doing at the site by looking at the types of ceramics that you find. So yeah, those kinds of garbage dumps, ancient ones, are super valuable to just get information about what people were up to in the past. And sometimes those bowls have been worn through. They've been used so much that they actually wore through them. So you also wonder, like, wow, like how long were, you know, was this being used for food preparation with this family, and like how many generations did it take, you know, of probably women preparing food for that bowl to break? So yeah, you do have like little moments like that where you try to, you know, get what individual people were up to, or what happened, you know, when that, you know, precious, you know, family bowl was broken, and you know, were they upset about it, or were they, what was going on? It's always interesting to think about.
And this is where we start getting into what I think is the most important stuff, because you and I were just talking about sort of the cycle of garbage and how, as your society reaches a level of affluence, the amount of shit that you're throwing out becomes exponentially larger. And that's something archaeologists have seen in the historical record. And you can watch the rise and fall of civilizations with their garbage. You know, we live in an island of garbage, in a sea of also garbage, and everything is just forever rotting. And here's Greg saying the same thing much, much more smartly.
That's actually another thing that Bill Rathje really kind of highlighted, is that, you know, when you look at it over the long term, you know, the ancient Maya, they kind of had a throwaway stage too, right? Where like things were good, raw materials were pretty cheap, and so they, you know, didn't do things like recycle or repair things a whole lot. But later on, when, you know, resources get a little bit more scarce, then you see people, you know, recycling stone tools. Instead of, you know, if you chip your stone tool, instead of just getting a new one, you would actually, you know, resharpen it. And so Rashi wrote about how, you know, the ancient Maya, once you get a certain point of that, resources become a little bit scarcer because of the growing population, that's when people start to, you know, start paying attention to sustainability, and they start looking at, you know, recycling or reutilizing things. And yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, parallel with our society today. I mean, maybe we're kind of reaching that point of, you know, thinking about doing a little bit more sustainable, you know, behavior, as opposed to kind of our throwaway mentality. But who knows? We'll see. Just in general, the Maya, you know, it's kind of just a reminder that, yeah, we humans, we can screw up, you know, like we can overextend ourselves, and sometimes things can go wrong.
Yeah, I think one of the things that this is really, like, just talking to all these people has really highlighted for me, is that we need more of a direct connection to our trash. And that's something you get at, like, these Burning Man events, because it is, you pack it all in, you pack it all out. I remember one morning at, like, it was the last morning of a 5-day event in Texas, one of their regional burns. And I'd just been partying all night. I'd done doing a ton of drugs, drinkings, and just creating, like, a pile of garbage of my own, of stuff that I was throwing out while I was debauching my way through the night. And my girlfriend at the time got up early to do her shift at the recycling camp. And so she had gotten up at like dawn and was just like toting bags and bags of, you know, whippets and beer cans and trashed food and drug paraphernalia and like broken costume pieces, just sacks and sacks of this stuff. And I'm wandering around and like sort of a coming down from acid haze, and I see her at the garbage camp, and I walk up and she's just got tears streaming down her face, and so does everybody else who just got up at like 6 a.m. to start throwing out garbage, because they're just surrounded by everybody else who's partying, and they're seeing this is like the waste that's created here. Like, this is the side effect of that. I think that's a really, it was a powerful moment for me. I wish I could say it made me into a better person, but clearly it didn't yet.
Well, it's great that we will look at museums and then look at our trash dumps and actually be able to find more artistry, more humanity in the trash dumps than we will be in 200 years in our museums. That the things that will look the most important to a culture, things that have been stashed away in very safe and beautifully built boxes, will pale in comparison to the things that we find in the holes that are 200 or 300 years older.
Yeah, the beauty of a bowl that was used so much that the bottom wore out of it, that like how many meals, how many people did that feed, how many generations ate off of that, yeah.
And that there's a more artistic value in a very simple bowl than there may be in a huge painting that people spent $83 million on at auction. It's kind of justice. It is the real cycle of life, that it's not what we kept, it's what we threw away. Cracked Gets Personal has been produced by Robert Evans, Brett Rader, and Alex Schmidt. It was engineered and edited by Brett Rader. On the next episode of Crack Gets Personal, we're talking to two modern-day slaves about the truth behind sex and labor trafficking in America.
He made money off of me from turning tricks. He made money off of me from the pornography. But, like, I had to sign a contract for the pornography. Like, so, I mean, to the producers, they were giving me the check and I was giving him the money. Because if I didn't, he would beat me. Like,
For Robert Evans, I'm your host, Brandon Johnson. Thank you for listening.
I'm H. Michael Cray.
And I'm Cuckoo Kulapilayasak, and we are the host of Who Charted, where we discuss the charts and pop culture and get to know our guests. Speaking of great guests, last week we had the wonderful Jason Manzoukas.
I'm so excited about this one. I can't wait for everybody to hear it. We had such a good time with Jason. We spoke of all his work in movie and films, and we had a great time counting down the charts.
So make sure you listen to us on Who Charted.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.